On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we talk about how Mike Florio cannot stop taking L's when it comes to Derek Carr. We also talk about how Dave Ziegler commented on Devontae Adams and how he represents the new Raider way. And we take a closer look at the offensive line, and maybe it's better than we all gave it credit for. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags,
RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Episode 98 for like full episodes, like podcasts that we do. Uh-huh. So I went collared shirt, right? Clean it up a
fancy.
Little bit. Like
fancy.
Semi-fancy, you know, got the collar on there. I didn't shave. So that, I got to leave something for episode 99. And then episode 100, I don't know, tuxedo t-shirt and top hat. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll do something special for episode 100.
Tails and canes and monocles. You're going to be looking good.
We're looking like Monopoly guys, right?
Yeah.
Grow out my mustache, get some mustache wax, yeah. Curl the sides like a pirate.
I'm wearing a Muay Thai sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Dress class up to join, you know?
Exactly. I don't know about you, but I partied so hard in Vegas last weekend that, you know, I'm barely surviving. Just kidding. I was in bed before 9.
Yeah, RJ, the one-hand party over here. Jesus. It was so sad. Such a sad display. Oh, come on. Here's the weekend. Pick a weekend. We'll hang out in Vegas.
Pick a weekend. I'll be there. I'm there every single weekend. All right, let's go.
They didn't see his ass for not even 1 second.
I didn't do.
Terrible. Like I said, so bad.
I think it was during my my solo chat yesterday. I was like, you know what? And this is a good thing because this is what's gonna happen to the Raiders players. Like when you're new to that, when you're not in Vegas that often, you're there. And because that was me for 15 years. I would go to Vegas 3-4 times a year to party, and I go 100 miles an hour, drinking everything in sight, shoving dollar bills into every G-string I can find, gambling my life away, right? Like I'm in Vegas, going 100 miles an hour. And then now that I'm there every single weekend, I'm like, I'm going to get some sushi, head to bed early, maybe watch some Matlock, you know, have a warm glass of milk under the cupboard by 9:30.
I'm going to ask you a question because you've been in hotels a lot more than me.
Okay.
Does every hotel TV have, what's that show, that Unsolved Mysteries or whatever?
I think they do just because so many of them are based in Vegas. That's like kind of giving you a warning.
Yeah, man. It's like every time I drink a little... It's like a Forensic Files or something. Like every time I freaking snuggle in bed, oh, there's Forensic Files. Let's watch this one.
She was also,
was a single mom from Oklahoma City. Like, oh, what the fuck?
She went to a Raider game in Las Vegas and was never heard from again. Last seen wearing a Broncos jersey. Well, like, but my point being is, I think that the Raiders players, other than like the new guys, right? Their brand, like the rookies, always will be an issue. But guys that have been there a while, it's like, all right, Vegas is Vegas. I'm over it. Like, I don't have to party hard in Vegas. It's home now. I'm used to it. But visiting players, players coming into town that, you know, went to high school in a small town in Texas, went to college in a small town in Alabama. Now they're playing, you know, NFL football in like Green Bay or Buffalo or something like that. And then they go to Vegas, and they're like, oh, bright lights, strippers everywhere, blah, blah, blah. I think it's going to be a trap game moving forward. That's what I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you were the trap game visitors player, and I was the, hey, double D fake titties in my face is just a regular Tuesday home team player. You know what I mean?
I mean, you could have gone 45 miles an hour. You know, you didn't have to go zero.
I could have calmly gone over some speed bumps as I went to the blackjack table with you. Yeah, but I didn't do shit.
Man, something. Play some. There'll be another time.
There'll be another time. So, as we all know, Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk has been bashing Derek Carr for several years now. Now, we'll get to some examples, but there's trolling, which is an art form, which is still lame, but there's kind of a, it's a half science, half art. And then there's what Mike Florio does, which is just being wrong. And there's a big difference. Here's Mike Florio, and he's his co-host, Miles Simmons. They're on Pro Football Talk talking about Derek Carr. Specifically, this is coming right after the announcement of his new contract that he got. Take a listen.
I don't buy this crap. He wouldn't play for any other team. I mean, come on, man. I know I give him too hard of a time at times, but I don't buy the idea that he would not play football if all of a sudden the Raiders said, we don't want you anymore. I just don't think that's true. No, because I think on one hand, he's a big phony. But on the other hand, I think he plays the role of the phony so well, he's kind of become that guy. And when you become that guy, it's kind of like the Tebow thing. You know, my wife would always tell me, why are you hard on Tim Tebow? I said, because there's an element of fraud there. He's selling as someone who he really is not. And that just kind of bothers me. I'm very big on being who you are, even if it pisses everyone off. I'd rather people be who they are. Life is easier when people are publicly who they are privately. And what you see with me is what you get, for better or worse, usually worse. But and she said, but you know what? If it's all fake, so what? It's a good way for him to be. Like, kids don't think of it the way that an adult does, that there's fraud there and he's not really that guy. He's a nice guy. He does nice things. So what if he's just doing it as some sort of an act or a show, or that's the guy he wants people to think that he is? He's still doing it. So with Derek Carr, like, I feel like he's acting like the way he thinks a franchise quarterback should act. And he's not really that guy. Maybe over the course of 8 years, he's become that guy. By repetition of pretending to be that guy, he has kind of spoken it into existence, if that makes any sense whatsoever. When he's not speaking in a fake country accent, he speaks that franchise quarterback role into existence. That's where I am with Derek Carr. So I like how he comes off. I just think sometimes he's full of crap.
Calling him a phony. You're shaking your head.
Dude, it just makes no sense. Like, he's acting, Florio is acting like he's known Carr his entire life, and he knows who he is and what he should act like, and the way he's acting is fake. Mm-hmm. He glances over the fact that, hey, fucking Carr grew up in fucking Houston the early part of his life until his fucking, what, mid-teens or something like that?
So he spent almost his entire youth in Houston and Bakersfield, which is basically the south of California.
Yeah, even though it's in the middle of the state, that's the south.
Bakersfield is cowboy country, like ranches, yeah. Farms,
so
cows.
Yeah, picture that. If you move from Texas to Bakersfield, not much difference. Mm-hmm. Not much difference there. Maybe a little bit drier, maybe not as humid as Houston is, but it's pretty much the same shit.
Better access to kale and yoga studios. That's about it. Otherwise, the exact same thing. And that's the big thing, right? Like, it's one thing to say, like, all right, and this is why with Florio, he's not a good troll. He's just incorrect. And there's two very different things. Like, Josh Dubow is a troll, right? He trolls Raider fans, right? From the Associated
Press. He gives facts.
Well, this is what he does. He'll put out stats that make the Raiders look bad without context. And if someone goes back at him with a stat that makes the Raiders look good, then he'll add context to make them look bad, right? So he's just like, well, these are just the stats. It's like, well, that shouldn't count because of, you know, it was a strike year, or because they were moving that year, or because the, you know, Carr's numbers are because of the line or whatever, right? Like, you add, if context makes the Raiders look better, Dubow doesn't use it. If context makes the Raiders look bad, then he does use it, right? It's always, how can I spin the negative? It's like you with Derek Carr forever. How can I spin the negative with the Raiders? And that's Josh Dubow, right? That's not what Florio was doing. No. Florio was just being incorrect. Florio, like, he's a smart guy. Like, he's a lawyer. And, like, when it comes down to breaking down contracts and stuff, I read his stuff. Like, he knows his stuff when it comes down to breaking down contracts, legalese. He's good at that. But he's such a bad broadcaster, and they're two very different skills. You can be a great football mind, terrible broadcaster. You can be a great broadcaster, terrible football mind. Florio's just a bad, lazy broadcaster. And so he says to himself, I need a Raiders take, right? Something happens with Raiders, I need a take. And he goes with, Derek Carr sucks. How can I spin everything bad Derek Carr? And he can't even give one good example of why Derek Carr was a phony. How else can you prove you want to be a Raider forever than to only take $26 million in guaranteed money?
It doesn't make sense.
There's no, I don't care what any of you think of Derek Carr, the player, right? Let's put aside, is Derek Carr the best player ever, the worst player ever? Let's put that aside for a second. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, his actions have always backed up his words. He says something crazy like, I'd rather golf than play anywhere else. And he takes a contract that says so. Like, he has backed up every single thing he's ever said. What, you can't give one example of Derek Carr being a phony. Derek Carr saying A and doing B. Florio didn't even try.
The one thing he said was, I don't believe that he wouldn't play anywhere else. And that's like, that. I said it in my live show. That's like saying, last night, I saved the universe from exploding and being demolished. You can't prove it.
Thank you.
Wow, you can't fucking prove. You can't prove that I did it because we're still here. But in the inverse, you can't prove right now that Carr's a phony by saying that because he's still playing. He's still playing for the Raiders. Now, if he does play for someone else, then you can say, oh, yeah, look, I thought he was a phony and this is why. But you can't say that now. And that's really the only reason he gave that he thinks he's a phony.
It's not even like that's not even a like that example, I think, doesn't even play because even though you can't prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that he wouldn't play for somebody else, he's taken a contract that said that. Like he's literally taking one of the worst contracts a quarterback in his position may have ever taken to prove that he wants to do his best for this team and he wants to stay a Raider. Like, what else can you ask an NFL player to do to prove that he wants to be on that team? Every player says it. Well, not every player, right? Debo Samuel certainly doesn't. But basically every single player, they're not dummies. They pander to their owner. They pander to their fan base, right? They know they're entertainers. Mm-hmm. I love being a Panther. Oh, there's no place I'd rather be than Green Bay, Wisconsin, right? And players say that. Derek Carr put his money where his mouth was. Derek Carr did a contract that said, yeah, I'll take less to be here because I want to be here. No one else does that the way Derek Carr just did.
It's like he backtracks at the same time. He says, okay, yeah, I don't believe in this and that. And then when Derek Carr proves that, yeah, I do want to be a Raider, I do want to stay here, the only thing he can grasp onto is one thing that he can't prove at the time, which is he wouldn't play anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. And another thing is, oh, yeah, he has a phony Texas accent. It's like, wait a second. You know, sometimes like after my accident, I developed a little bit of a lisp and it comes out sometimes if I'm not very conscious of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Derek Carr is a little bit tired one day or he's kind of like, you know, going back and forth and just talking off like maybe a question that's a little bit more personal, talking about personal feelings and stuff, he might let his guard down a little bit and a little bit of that twang can come out.
He lived in Houston and Bakersfield.
That's how you talk.
If you grew up in Houston and Bakersfield,
I know some Houston people that Kalisha, if you're listening to this, homegirl I met in Dallas, you sound like a country bumpkin. I can listen to her read anything, read a ketchup bottle. It's fucking hilarious because that accent is so freaking deep. She will never get rid of it. It's something, you know, you just keep it a little bit sometimes.
Now, this isn't a one-time thing with Florio. Florio's been doing this for a long time. So our good friend at Raider Posts, highly recommend you follow him on social media, Instagram and Twitter. He put together, I cut this video down because it's pretty long, but he's did a video. This is Florio dating back to 3 years ago through about a year ago. Take a listen.
You can't tell me that Gruden, who is always thinking about everything, every permutation, every possibility, you can't tell me he hasn't at least some point considered whether or not he could upgrade at the quarterback position and maybe get a Ryan Fitzpatrick. I really do believe deep down that the Raiders are looking for a new brain for their Frankenstein monster, and that brain for an NFL team is a quarterback. Man, it's going to be a long decade or so for the Raiders until they find a franchise quarterback. The bottom line is, whether it's Nathan Peterman, Mike Glennon, or someone else, I think the real message here deep down is that John Gruden wants not Derek Carr. You know, a lot of great quarterbacks out there, that John Gruden looks at and says, where's mine? I just think that John Gruden is going to be looking for somebody else, whether it's Jameis Winston or someone else. I think they're going to look and see what else is out there. And I think Derek Carr could very well be gone. You know how John Gruden feels about Tom Brady,
right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the idea that this gets him out of the Derek Carr conundrum, right. And we know that Derek Carr isn't good enough in John Gruden's eyes. That's a given. Now, sorry, Derek, you can block us on Twitter, but you can't block us on TV. You can change the channel. The idea that Derek Carr is going to take every snap that he wants to take with the Raiders for as long as he wants to is not only naive, it's incorrect. I've heard from a source that I trust that the Raiders are not going to trade him, but I've yet to report it at PFT because I still think even under those circumstances, you can't rule out John Gruden catching a wild hare.
Mike Florio has been taking L's in the Derek Carr discussion for half a decade. For 5 years now, he's been saying he's going to be traded. He's going to be gone. John Gruden's going to have Nathan Peterman replace him. Ryan Fitzpatrick replace him. Jameis Winston replace him.
Mike Glennon
replace him. He's going to trade him away. Mike Florio has been wrong about Derek Carr for half a decade, and he just keeps going. And this is the difference between being a troll and just being a bad broadcaster and being wrong. He's just saying this is going to happen, and it never, ever, ever does.
Eventually, the Raiders are going to move on from Derek Carr. Eventually. Okay? No one plays
for Derek Carr's going to play for the Raiders for 25 years, and Florio's going to be like, see, I told you. I told you he was going to be gone.
That's why he's sticking to his guns. Because eventually he's going to be right. The Raiders will move on eventually. And that's when that's why he can hang his hat on that. Mm-hmm. And because nothing will be worse for good old fuckface, as I like to call him, between you, me, and Rory. Mm-hmm. Nothing will be better for him or worse for him, excuse me, than him changing his position on Carr and then the Raiders getting rid of him soon after that. Then he's just like, oh, fuck, I was wrong the whole time.
You can't be right if you've been wrong for 5 years. Like, it's like saying, hey, I have the perfect blackjack strategy. You always hit when you have 20. And I bust 87 times in a row, but I get an ace one time. And I turn around and be like, yeah, see, Soto, I'm right. Perfect strategy. You always hit on a 20. Every time that ace is coming. Like,
I will tell you one thing about blackjack. So our good friend and I were playing blackjack, and maybe we had a little too many. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, it's, you know, whatever. I think they have alcohol in Vegas. So we were at this low stakes table, and we're like, you know what? We're gonna, like, the rule of what, like, the book says X to do on this hand, right? Mm-hmm. And we're like, you know what? That book was written by Vegas, the people that screw you over. Like, let's go against the book. We were doubling on 12s. We were splitting 20s. We were doing all that. If they had like a six, that the
airtight strategy, Soto.
We both ended up winning money.
You and Mike Florio have the same logic. You guys should hang out more.
Hey, yeah.
There's no better example of how dumb this was than seeing Miles Simmons' face when he was going through that. Look at this guy.
Look at Miles.
He's like, look,
Florio, you're an idiot.
He's like, how the hell did I end up co-hosting this show with Florio? He's like, oh, what?
Freaking pencil neck geek.
What the hell is this guy talking about? I accidentally, like, I didn't mean to screenshot this. I was just like, pause the video, and it stopped right here. I was like, oh, this is too perfect.
Look at him. Florio have Lego Man hair? Is that like the hair you just pop on the top of the head?
Hair plugs?
I don't know.
You and I aren't in a position to talk about a man's hair like that.
It's true.
So the latest thing. So that was Florio immediately after. Now, Florio, in his effort to continue to be wrong, doubled down on that comment. He put out an article talking about how Derek Carr is being paid like a top 10 quarterback when he's not a top 10 quarterback. It's basically saying Derek Carr is being overpaid. The most team-friendly contract in quarterback history, and Florio still, in his devotion to taking L's, is saying He's not a top 10 quarterback and shouldn't be paid like one. In the article, he said, when performing an up and down exercise and whether any given player is a top 10 quarterback, the total list of top 10 quarterbacks quickly reaches 20. Thus, given that Derek Carr is once again being paid like a top 10 quarterback, unless the Raiders dump him after 1 year of his new four-year deal, it's fair to ask whether he's a top 10 quarterback. The easy answer, no, he's not. He's not being paid like a top 10 quarterback. And yet, he wants to shit on Derek Carr somehow. So he starts it off with an incorrect premise just so he can talk about Derek Carr not being a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, it's getting old now, and it's starting to irk me that people are counting other people's money. Like, it doesn't, and it's not only is it just a bad practice to do, it's also not the right way you want to look at someone's contract. Who cares how much we pay them? These owners all have enough money to pay all their players a shit ton of money. The thing we have to focus on is, what's the cap hit? That's what you got to focus on. So is he a top 10 against the cap in quarterbacks? No. And that's what you have to look at. This is what that cap hit is, what hamstrings your team, not the total money. Unless you're freaking Watson and everything of it, every bit of it's guaranteed. But even this year, his cap hit is what, $1 million guaranteed or something like that?
Well, look, here's a look at the top quarterback's salary. Just salary, right? Derek Carr, not top 10, number 12, right? So, like, okay, he's not top 10 in salary, Florio. You're wrong there. Okay, maybe he meant cap hit. Maybe that's what Florio meant. Let's give Florio the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he meant, all right, he's top 10 in cap hit. Here's a look at cap hit. Number 12. Not even top 10 in cap hit. All right. Well, maybe Florio's thinking, oh, maybe it's guaranteed money he's talking about. Maybe he's top 10 in guaranteed money. Carr's 25th in guaranteed money at quarterback. 25th. By no metric.
Crazy.
Is Derek Carr a top 10 paid quarterback? And I'm not even having the is Carr a top 10 quarterback or not conversation. We'll save that for another. There's plenty of time to have that conversation.
Yeah.
He's not, by any metric, paid like a top 10 quarterback. By the time that, like, $40 million kick in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons, he won't be top 10 then either.
Never.
That's the way quarterback pay is going.
Yep.
He had all the leverage to be a top 5 paid quarterback. Maybe better. Because that's what always happens, right? The next contract's always the biggest one, right? He had the leverage to be right there, like right behind Aaron Rodgers, if he wanted to. If he really played hardball. But he didn't. He didn't play hardball. And yet, this isn't Florio trolling. It's not him having an opinion based on a fact that's wrong. It's him getting the facts wrong. Like, he's so dedicated to shitting on Carr, he'll get facts wrong. To tell another fact that to be the basis of another fact that's wrong.
I think what he's doing is he's just hoping that people don't call, like, look at his shit. Because honestly, it's too easy, and it's the wrong way to look at things. Again, the total amount of a contract, who cares how much they get paid? There's plenty of money to go around in the NFL. It's about how much are you taking up what limited amount of money you can spend, a specific type of money you can spend, which is cap hit. Yeah. That's the most important thing, is what's his cap hit? And it just doesn't make any sense for him to count his, like, who cares how much he gets paid overall? It doesn't matter. In the scope of NFL, it doesn't matter. All that matters is your cap hit.
I think this all stems from when Derek Carr blocked Florio on Twitter. And he's literally the only guy that, like, took it to heart. Derek Carr blocks hundreds of people on Twitter. He's blocking everywhere. He's like Dikembe Mutombo, just waving his finger at every single person.
No, not
that has any piece of negativity, right? And every single person who's blocked by Derek Carr is met with a shrug. It's like, yeah, that's Carr. Whatever. Moving on. Water off a duck's back. No sweat off my sack. I'll be fine. Florio's the only guy that spent the last half decade pissed that Derek Carr blocked him, and he has a vendetta. He's the only guy. He's the only guy so sensitive that he actually takes it to heart, like a 13-year-old on a Snapchat.
Yeah, I think Adam Hill actually wears it as a badge of honor.
Like, most people do.
Yeah, he got me. Like, yeah. He got me. Carr got me too.
I said I didn't like his haircut. Now I'm blocked. Right? Like, that's how Derek Carr is. He's like, even the 1% negativity, you're blocked, like everybody else. And everyone,
he's acting like a heartbroken fucking tween. Like, come on, dude, relax.
It's bad.
It doesn't make sense. It's just like you said, it's just lazy. It's just lazy reporting. It's just lazy commentary, lazy analysis. I mean, if you're gonna do something like that, at least get some facts right where you can pull back and say, these are the facts, this is what I'm looking at. It just doesn't make any sense.
If you want to troll, then troll. But don't just take L's. There's a giant difference. So Dave Ziegler had a press conference today on 420. Happy 420 to those who celebrate. And it was a press conference on the draft, a pre-draft press conference. And when you don't have a first or second round pick, you get a lot of non-draft questions.
Yeah, right.
on a pre-draft press conference, right? I'm still trying to debate what we're going to do for our show next week on our like pre-draft show when we don't have the first and second. We'll come up with some good stuff, but it's a different type of show. And Dave Ziegler was asked about Devontae Adams because OTA started last week. And, what's your first impressions about Devontae Adams? And here's what Ziegler had to say.
Devontae is a worker, and he comes in with a purpose every day to get better. And so, you know, he's just a dialed in person. That's like, you know, you walk in, right? And for him, this is something that he loves to do, but this is a business for him, and it's a job that he takes very seriously. And he comes in with that approach. I mean, this guy comes in with an approach to win the day and to get better individually. And it's an approach that I think is really good for our young players to see. This guy's highly accomplished. He's been very productive in his career. There's a reason for all those things. And you kind of see that in his approach day to day.
Now, that's the first time you saw that, right?
Yeah.
First time you heard that? Okay. Notice, like, there's a million, like, people think like, oh, that's just coach speak. That's just GM speak. There's a million things you can say about the best receiver on your team. He didn't say he's an athletic specimen. Oh, I saw his catching balls and he'll never drop a pass. Oh, he's in sync with Derek Carr. Oh, I saw him in the weight room and he's just so strong. He could have said all those things. Instead, he said he's working his ass off. He's trying to win the day. He is who he is because of his work ethic. That sounds so much like a Patriot Way GM talking about a Patriot Way type player. And I feel like Devontae Adams, obviously he fit perfectly with the Raiders because we needed an X receiver. We needed a number one receiver. Derek Carr and him jive. You know, we had the cap space. We had the picks. Like, all those reasons, right? There's a million reasons why Devontae
Adams.
It's all lined up. But being that type of guy, because normally, like, oftentimes receivers, they're usually the divas of the team. And you kind of have to be, right? You don't have to be, but, like, it kind of goes hand in hand. Give me the ball. I want the ball. Give me the ball. Give me, 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 me. That's what you do as a receiver, right? Devontae Adams, all hard work, all structure, all brain. Dave want get better every single day. He's I think, exactly what we can expect from Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels moving forward personnel-wise. Obviously not all going to be the best at the position, but guys wired that way, like Devontae Adams, because that's A, the quote-unquote Patriot way that they're trying to replicate, and B, that's what this Raiders squad is. Mm-hmm. All our best guys are our hardest workers. Carr, Crosby, Renfro, Waller, Miller. Perryman. The leaders are the hard workers, the dialed in dudes. And Devontae Adams is the epitome of that.
Yeah, when your most accomplished player on your team is your most consistent, hardest worker, young players and even not young players, they look at that player and say, okay, he's as good as he is, he's maximizing his talent the way he is because of how he approaches every day. Mm-hmm. The word that I'm looking at, he's a professional. He looks at this is my profession, and I need to work at my craft every single day. And I've gotten to where I've gotten in this career because I look at it like a job, and I have fun doing it. I enjoy it, but I have to work at it every single day. And I have, the harder I work at it, the better I am at it. Mm-hmm. So if you want, it's better than like, you know, you have a, just a super, and I'm not saying that he's not athletic, but a supernaturally gifted player who doesn't really have to work as hard and is still a supreme athlete and a supreme player because he's just that much better athletically. Mm-hmm. A younger player can look at him and like, well, he's doesn't work as hard as other people and he still balls out. Maybe I don't have to work quite as hard every single day. No, that's not the case with Davante Adams. Davante Adams, every single day, I want to win this day. Every single day, I'm going to be the hardest worker here. And that's just the tone for everybody else. And it's a good thing to have your best player be your hardest worker.
John Gruden said that one of his like coaching symposiums. And again, we could talk about John Gruden all day long about his good, bad qualities as a coach. But he nailed it when he said, for you to succeed, for you to have a winning locker room and a winning culture, your best players have to be the hardest workers because mm-hmm. they have to set the example. They have to be like, all right, this is what it takes to be, to wear that C on your jersey, to go to the Pro Bowl, to be the highest paid guy, to be the one that leads meetings. Yep. You got to be busting your ass. And Davante Adams fits right into that. And that's, and that again, and that's the very delicate Petri dish that is a NFL locker room, right? Because you've got so many egos, such a diverse group of people, you know, the different backgrounds, everyone's making different money. They all see things the different way from all over all parts of the country. It's so diverse. And to get them all to be rowing in the same direction in unison, that ain't easy. Nope. And so when you've got it nailed down and you've got it, like the Raiders clearly did late last season when they beat all these teams they shouldn't have, you don't want to fuck that up. And so Davante Adams, if he was as same numbers, same skill set, still played with Carr, but was like an Antonio Brown type asshole, they don't make this move.
Nope.
They don't make this move at all.
Nope. Yeah, and it's interesting you brought up Gruden because every player in the NFL has to have an ego. You can't play this type of game, such a violent game, with such supreme athletes. Like, we talk about, oh, that guy runs a 5.6 or a 4.6. That guy runs a 4.3. You know what the difference between a 4.6 and a 4.3 is?
0.3.
It's
math genius.
Wow. No, I'm not talking about visually. It's not that much. It's very minuscule, right? But so when a mediocre athlete in the NFL is compared to the difference is so small between a supreme athlete in one sense and a mediocre athlete for your position. These guys are all supreme athletes, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to have an ego to be able to play this game effectively, especially when you're not guaranteed success, you know, 100% of the time. So the difference with Gruden is his ego kind of bordered into the arrogance, right? And you don't get that from Davante Adams. He has the ego because you have to have a healthy ego to be able to play this game and to be able to know, yeah, I'm going to be able to beat this guy in front of me. But it's not arrogance because he still works really hard at it. He doesn't say, oh, well, I'm the best player here.
How do you channel your ego? Is it, I'm the best, I don't have to do shit? Or I'm the best and I'm going to prove it at 5 a.m. in the morning at the Raiders facility? Right?
I'm going to make sure I stay the best as long as I can. Yeah. And that's, again, that's the same thing with coaching and everything. Like, how are you going to maximize the players on your team? How are you going to maximize their talents? You have to be able to coach them and be consistent and be smart and schematically be correct. And it works everywhere in the NFL. Is you have to have that ego, but you also have to have that work ethic too.
This is why I think we're going to see, and again, we're all trying to figure out if Mick Ziegler, Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler are going to be the Patriot way or their own way or somewhere in between or what's going to be. It really feels like personnel-wise, they're doing it the Patriot way, where character, work ethic, these are like priorities. And they've said it. And again, they say it all the time, but almost all coaches say that. We want guys that stand for the shield, right? Every coach says that. But it feels like they're putting their money where their mouth is in that element, where it's going to be only high character guys on this team because we've got this perfect, you know, they're mad scientists, right, with little beakers, and they're putting it all. And we've got this perfect mixture that is a great locker room. And we are not going to – our pH level is exactly 8.34291. And we're not going to let it deviate from that number because it's so rare to get.
Yeah, let me pull the curtain back on this fucking Patriot Way thing. The Patriot Way, just the freaking phrase, is total bullshit. It's just because it's with the Patriots. If you look at teams that are nothing like the Patriots, like, for example, like that show that's going on right now on HBO, like Winning Time, right? The Showtime Lakers. They went out, they had fun, they partied, but Pat Riley, bro, Pat Riley was infamous for running some of the toughest practices in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Okay, you take a look at like a team.
That's
like
why he slicked back his hair, so he can be aerodynamic.
So we look at like a team like the Detroit Pistons. They wore Raider gear. They were the bad boys. They're the bad guys. They had some of the toughest practices, and they worked the hardest out of any team in the NBA. So you can be professional. You can work hard at your craft and not be buttoned down and boring and tight-lipped like the Patriots are. You can still have fun and be loose, and it's just professionalism. It's all it is. It's just being a professional and looking at your craft like a professional does, and working at it every single day, being consistent, know what has to be done, hold yourselves accountable, hold those around you accountable. And that's all it is. You doesn't have to be like boring and buttoned down the way that Belichick, you know, presents himself.
You don't have to all wear a collared shirt like RJ doing a podcast. You know what I mean?
True.
All cleaned up. Should I do top button to make it even more fancy? No.
We got essay or what?
No. No delay.
You and that freaking top button reminds me when Johnny Depp was playing a cholo in 21 Jump Street. I'm like, that is the wackest looking fucking essay I've ever seen in my life. Simon essay. Like, are you kidding me? What it's is like, he saying?
I'm not buying it. So you gave you put down some stats that you pulled from ESPN's Next Gen on our O-line. And I think it's fair to say universally next season, the offensive line has the biggest question mark around it because they didn't play great last season. As of now, it's all the same guys from last season, more or less.
They're running it back, sure.
They may add in the draft, but again, as of now, no first or second round pick, so it might not be any big splash or anyone really expected to start out of the gate. Maybe not, but
who knows?
You generally don't think a third, fourth, or fifth round pick will start day one, but it happens, right? Mm. Hunter Renfrow did, Max Crosby did, right? It happens. Mm. And so with that, you got some next gen stats that kind of paint a picture that maybe they're not as bad as we thought they were. Because few people were harder on our O-line than you were last season, and all with good reason.
Yeah, I mean, it shows how they rank against other players in their position in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It brings up, like you said, like, you know, hey, maybe they're not as bad as we thought. There's a couple things missing, but it also shined a light on some things that that we struggled with. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with Colton Miller. Colton Miller and left tackles, you know, you see right here, he won. So here's the win. Here's the next gen stat is win rate, right? The win rate, I took a look at it. It's can you sustain or win, quote unquote, win? Like if you pancake somebody and move on, can you win that block for 2.5 seconds? So basically, can you give your dynamic offensive player, which is either the quarterback or the running back for the offensive lineman, do you give them 2.5 seconds, right? Of time to do what they're supposed to do. Do you win your block, right? So Colton Miller at left tackle, 83% run block win rate, which was 31st out of left tackles.
There's only 32 good. Teams.
Yeah, not good. He was 93% win rate in pass blocking, which was 5th, so very good. So he is categorized as a bad run blocker as left tackles go, but a good pass blocker as left tackles go. So we move on to his neighbor on the left guard, John Simpson. He was a 62% run block win rate, 30th out of left guards, 90% pass block win rate, which was 23rd, not that much better, out of left guards. So out of those stats, he was considered a bad run blocker and a bad pass blocker.
And you can tell position matters because 90% at guard is terrible, whereas 93% at tackle is awesome because you're not going against Von Miller, right?
Right, guard. Yeah.
You know, you're not going against these awesome edge rushers.
Yeah, that's why that 2.5 seconds is key because, I mean, some of these guys are so quick and strong and fast, 2.5 seconds is not possible. They're going to be by you. You can give your quarterback some time, but 2.5 seconds is just too much. So move on to center, Andre James, 78% run block win rate, which was 16th, so middle of the road for centers, 81% pass block win rate, which is 22nd. So by that account, he was a good run blocker, but a bad pass blocker.
And good run block is being generous. That's
yeah. I mean, he's in the middle road. Yeah. Okay. Alex Leatherwood. He was a 70% run block win rate, which was 13th out of right guards, 86% pass block win rate, and that was 28th out of guards. So here's one thing that you're going to have to take a look at here. We have one side of the line that is better at run blocking than pass blocking, and one side of the line that's better at pass blocking than run blocking. So Miller and Simpson were better at pass blocking than run blocking, but then James and Leatherwood were better at run blocking than pass. So you don't have a balanced line. Mm-hmm. If one side does one thing well, they don't do another.
The defense knows which side to attack.
For sure. Now, here's an interesting thing about Alex Leatherwood, because he did play plenty of snaps at right tackle. At right tackle, right? So he was before we move on, Leatherwood was considered a good run blocker, but a bad pass blocker, right? So let's move on to right tackle with Leatherwood. Leatherwood, this is terrible. He was 57% pass block win rate as a right tackle and 60% run block win rate as a right tackle, both dead last. He was the worst blocker, no matter how you slice it, at right tackle. So for all you guys saying, oh, he's just a rookie, he's this and that, and blah, 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 he was dead last in win rate in both passing and run blocking.
When right Brandon back. Parker is a massive improvement on you.
Yeah, bro. You should not play right tackle. All right. Speaking of Brandon Parker, Brandon fucking Paca. All right. 78% run block win rate at right tackle, which is actually 7th.
I guess.
That's crazy. 75% pass block win rate, which was 14th at right tackle. So according to these stats, just at blocking win rate, Parker was considered a good run and pass blocker. The only one that was better than average in both categories on the line. It doesn't take into account a couple of things, penalties.
It doesn't take into account most things. And this is where, again, like when it comes to PFF or ESPN Next Gen stats, there's a place for them. I'm glad they exist. And you add it to the conversation. It isn't the conversation. So, like, I like PFF and Next Gen Stats for, like, oh, we just picked up this, unrestricted free agent backup right guard. I don't know anything about him. Let's look up his PFF, right? I don't have hours of tape on him. He hasn't been on the Raiders. I haven't seen him play. I can't tell you what he's about. I have nothing. So let me just see his PFF score. Okay, I've learned something about him. PFF and Next Gen, to me, like, they're not useless for our own team, but it's like, maybe it'll give you an eye opener. Like, okay, here's one element of playing line is how long can you hold your block for 2.5 seconds? One element, right? That doesn't take into account if I was supposed to just, touch him and then move up. This doesn't take if, hey, I was supposed to be double teaming somebody. I'm supposed to be helping somebody. Am I blocking the right guy? Am I blocking the wrong guy? And it's only 2.5 seconds. Did I completely whiff and the edge gets to the quarterback right away? Or did I hold for 2.4 seconds and it's still kind of, and we're running a quick slant and it's still fine, right? It's one tiny sliver to evaluate. Although absolutely it's a piece of information that's worth having.
Yeah. It doesn't take into account a couple of things because it can go either way. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a low path, a low block win rate, it can be, like you said, for example, you're not blocking the right guy, so you don't know the play, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, what is that? Okay, better coaching, more drilling, make sure that you know who you're supposed to block, you know the situation. That's one thing. You could also not hold your block because you're physically not capable to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Your technique is bad. So if you're physically not capable to do it is one thing. If your technique is bad, you can fix your technique and maybe make that better. So that those are things that you can identify and then look at tape and then see for yourself and practice. Does he know the plays? Does he know where he's supposed to be? Is he blocking the right guy? Is his technique bad or he's just getting bowled over? One of the two or one of a lot of different scenarios or possibilities, but it's very similar to like watching a combine for a draft prospect. You see these guys' skills. Okay, how do these skills relate to their game? How does it translate to the game film? So it gives you a good jumping off point. But if a guy is super fast, but he's not blown by anybody on the field, okay, he doesn't really translate that well to the field. Now you have to figure out why. Is the technique bad? Is he hesitant? Like, what's going on? So it gives you kind of a jumping off point to kind of study further. But, you know, it was a little eye-opening for me, I thought. The fact that half the line did something well, the other half didn't do that one thing well. I mean,
does this make the line look better or worse than you thought before you saw these stats?
Worse in a way, because there's really not any continuity. They don't, yeah. There's two guys on one side that do something really well that the other side does poorly, and then vice versa. So, I mean, there's no wonder why we don't get a big push and run blocking, because one side of the line can run block, the other side can't. One side of the line can pass block well, the other side can't. So, you know, it's difficult to build a game plan around that, knowing or if you don't have a lot of continuity. You can't hang your hat on something. Okay, you know what? Our line is great at run blocking, right? So even if we get in trouble, we can always, you know, rely on our run block. Well, we don't have that because some of the guys do it well and some of the guys don't.
I keep saying it, and I keep saying it slightly different every single week, but I think it holds true that Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, I think they're going young because they want continuity over five great individuals, mm-hmm. right? I think what they're doing is, look, your run block win rate, it matters. It's something. It's not nothing. It's a good stat. I'm glad that we have that stat. But what's more important is, Simpson, are you communicating with Miller of what we're doing on this zone run to the left? That's more important. It's like, hey, Miller, I give you a little side eye, and you immediately know what that means because you've done this, you've ran this play together 100 times, and you know, hey, I'm going to move up to the next level and get the linebacker, or hey, hold that block a little bit while longer because I got to get around this end to get my seal block or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That I think is more important than individual stats run, right? And again, they still matter, right? If you're five just a terrible people, even great continuity and great teamwork isn't going to save you if you can't just do a basic block on a, you know, nose guard, nose tackle. But that's more what I care about, and that's more tape dependent than, you know, fumble recovery numbers or penalty numbers or whatever that is. It's how are you guys jiving together if we're going to keep you guys together for long term?
Yeah, it's definitely not the whole story. It's a part of it. It's a good jumping off point to look back and say, okay, well, this guy has technique issues doing X. How does that affect his overall ability to block in this sense? Okay, yeah, it translates. Now we see that he has bad technique here. We can fix that, right? Or this guy's getting bowled over on a pass rush. You know, how often does that happen? You look at his pass per win rate and it's low. Okay, well, yeah, maybe it's not a technique issue. Maybe he's just not strong enough at the point of attack. Then we can, you know, see what we can do to either fix that or maybe replace with someone else. It's a good place to look and gauge and you know, a piece of your research.
I think my biggest takeaway for this is that if it's just five individuals doing five individual things, we're fucked.
Yeah, right.
If it's simply like, all right, you five guys each do your own thing and block the guy in front of you, we're fucked. Like, they're just not that good. But if they're a cohesive unit that's executing a plan together, and you've got, you know, one of the best pre-snap guys in football, Derek Carr, directing them, and they're listening, they understand what's going on, They trust each other. They know what each other are doing. We'll be all right. But if it's just skill for skill, our tackles versus the AFC West edge rushers,
it's going to be rough.
Derek Carr's going to be in a cast by week four. If that's
That's really why. That's why I really think that we're going to go heavy on offensive line early in our picks, because to your point, build the continuity, get younger guys in there, and just best man wins. And there's so many good offensive linemen here. There's going to be some guys that slip that normally wouldn't be in that good a player in round three or four. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they go offensive line in their first two picks, third and fourth round.
Ready to some what up winbacks?
Yes, sir.
Kimo from Kalihi. Florio, the type of guy to take the seat off a bicycle before riding it.
Got him. You see that video?
First? Does he see spit that on it?
There's a video out there. There's a video out there of a seat. It's one of those seats that has like a gap in the middle, you know, like one of those like riding seats that has a space in the middle of it to make it more, you know, aerodynamic and fit, you know, better on your butt.
Okay.
And but when you sit on it, it has a spring, so the seat goes down and there's a post there that just gets you right in the butt, right? So these guys left a bike there to be stolen, so it's just sitting there unlocked. And they just watch guys try to steal this bike and get completely violated. And it's pretty freaking hilarious.
The guys that really like it are just like, oh, this is the perfect bike. And they just start going 100 miles an hour. They're like,
it does exist. Me too.
It's like Mac's exercise bike from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Ass Blaster 5000.
Ass Blaster 5000.
When you start slowing down, it just gives you a blast. It gives you a boost.
I call it the Ass Pounder 4000. And it works like this. No. Imagine you're riding up a steep hill and you've already been working super hard and you're sweating and you're tired. What do you do when you're tired? You want to rest. You go to sit down, it pushes you right back up into your workout. The Ass Pounder 4000 will never let you rest.
Really works your glutes. Like, okay, Mac. Akuma Code. I agree with you that DC needs to be better than 1-to-1 touchdown turnover ratio this season. He has all the tools in the team to do it, a better play caller and a better scheme, in my opinion.
I think
no
he
more
will.
Turnovers, please.
I think he will. I think that the reason why I put this out there, and I got a lot of backlash from it, I'm not saying the reason why I'm saying it is because I believe Derek Carr is a better quarterback than a 1-to-1 ratio. He was missing a lot of things. He was missing his play caller. He was missing his, you know, starting X receiver. He had, his best target out for a big chunk of time. He had a makeshift offensive line. There was a lot of things that were going against him that led to this ratio. What I'm saying is now that we has an offensive line that has 1 year together moving and they're together again, he has a legit playmaker on the outside in Davante Adams. He has a genius offensive coordinator. I'm not my words. This is what I've heard. He's a genius offensive coordinator in the head coach, Josh McDaniels, and he has Waller coming back, hopefully healthy for this year. I mean, all these signs point to Carr having that better ratio. My statement is, if Carr has the same ratio of touchdowns to turnovers, total turnovers, this year with all these things in his favor that he didn't have last year, that's going to be a rough year for us. He needs to be better, and I think with all these tools and improvements, he will be better.
I can point to one thing I think Derek Carr is going to improve on the absolute most next season. It is turnovers. Because you look at what Josh McDaniels, like we read how, again, it's Mac Jones, a rookie, a different quarterback than Derek Carr. But there's reports that Josh McDaniels would fine Mac Jones for scrambling. It's like, nope, you're not doing that. We're not going to get you hurt. We're not going to get you fumbling. We're not going to get you. No,
that's not you.
We are putting you in this box, and this is all you're doing. Right? Because this is where we trust you. And we're going to maximize you here. Right? Whereas John Gruden had what he wanted his quarterback to do and forced his quarterback to do it. Josh McDaniels is, this is what I know you can do. I'm going to take what you do well and make that the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so Josh McDaniels obviously knows, I can't imagine anything. I can't think of anything that drives an offensive coordinator from the Patriots more up the wall than turnovers. And he's going to say, all right, I know how to fix this turnover machine that is Derek Carr. And we're going to put him in a box where he can maximize. Now, they didn't bring in Devontae Adams just to throw, you know, 5 yard outs, right? Like, they're going to throw deep and they're going to go big and they're going to have Derek Carr, I'm sure, move in the pocket when he needs to, because he improved on that and things like that. But hey, when you start getting in trouble, Derek, we're going to start rounding off those edges. Instead of your game being this huge, giant thing, your game's going to be more like this. We're going to make this your game, and we're going to get rid of all this peripheral stuff that made you fumble Ruski all the time.
Yeah, if you're better at doing X and Y, why are we planning or game planning for you to do Z every once in a while? Mm-hmm. That was Gruden's mindset. Oh, well, we got to keep him guessing. Like, no. Keep doing what you do best, but do it well. Do that well, and it will work because, you know, percentage-wise, doing the things that you do best, you're going to get more often than not going to get a better result from it. When you're asking someone to do something that he's not as good at, even if everything works out perfect, he's not as good doing that as what he does well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, plus you have players who know how to get open and a guy who knows how to scheme. When you have players that can get open, the scheme isn't as important because guys are just physically gifted, right? They're able to do it like a Randy Moss. You don't really have to scheme him open, okay? He can fucking get up and get it no matter what. But when you have
Culpepper just closed his eyes and threw 30 yards for like four seasons.
There's an interview with Culpepper when he's like, I just threw it up there. I knew he would get it. He would get it 80% of the time, Randy Moss. Yeah. Or if he didn't get it, he'd at least knock it down. I just had to make sure I get it high enough. Well, if I get it up there, it's going to be either a good result or a neutral result, right? So you have that to a certain extent in Renfro and Adams, guys who can get open on pretty much anyone. But you also have, you know, Josh McDaniels who can scheme you open too. With that combo, man, I'm really interested. I'm intrigued to see how we're gonna look offensively next year.
Carlos N. Fuego, do you think to yourself that this team looks like a championship team with all the additions? Looks good, doesn't it? Raider Nation for life. Very simple question. Is it a championship team? Not an easy answer.
No, not at all. I mean, the problem is you don't, like you were saying about the offensive line, it's not just a collection of different pieces put together. It's how that unit plays cohesively as a unit, right? You could bring in pieces. I mean, look at like freaking Golladay. He went to the Giants last year and had a shit year. He's a great player. He's shown that he's a great player, but in the wrong system, in the wrong situation, he's not that good. We're looking at how are these players going to play in this system? How are they going to play together with each other? They have the pieces to be a championship team, I believe. How are those pieces play together? Who knows? We have to see. I mean, signs point to them working well and being cohesive, but it still has to happen.
I think a couple of things have to happen. I think they're all going to have to pick up on the new defensive scheme, the new offensive scheme. Mm-hmm. The skill players on offense, I think, are perfectly built to pick up Josh McDaniels' system. Waller and Renfro, great at choice routes, which is McDaniels does. They tried to trade for Derek Carr last season, so clearly they think Derek Carr can pick up the system well. Like you mentioned, that line, giant question mark. Can our young guys on defense pick up the slack in a new scheme? Very fair question. But I think it comes down to this. Like, all the shit the Raiders went through last season, Gruden gone, Ruggs, Waller out, just new head coach, everything that happened. Still won 10 games and went to the playoffs. Still one play away from making it to the divisional round, right? The team's better. The team's better than that now.
They're more talented.
Personnel-wise, talent-wise, better. And it's all character guys that shouldn't muck up that great team synergy and great locker room that was developed last season. Like, everything is better. So I think in one word, I mean, if this team was able to accomplish everything they accomplished last season, overcoming all that adversity and all that shit, there's no reason not to be over the moon optimistic with our chances next season. There's really no reason to.
Well, another thing too is Graham is like the defensive Josh McDaniels. He's not going to ask you to do something that you can't do or that you don't do well. Now, the more things that you can do well, the more you're going to play. But if you only do one or two things really well, he's not going to ask you to do something else. He's going to make sure that you're in the scheme or you're in the game plan to do what you do well. He's not going to put you in a position to not be successful. You have to go out and execute, of course, but it's not going to be for lack of scheming, right? And what you said about this team being a good cohesive team and being a good character team, this is a type of team, and we've seen the Patriots do it before, where you can bring in, if a guy slides for a specific reason, maybe a character issue or something like that, this is the type of team that can absorb a guy like that, because if most of your team falls in line and is the hardworking team and the leaders are the guys that keep everyone in line by example, if you're a fuck up or if you have a head case, you have an attitude, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb and you're going to be the guy that doesn't match up to everyone else.
Yeah, I really wonder. I really wonder if Dave Ziegler thinks, all right, we can take a fuck up here and there because we have such a good locker room. Like, we'll cure the fuck up as opposed to the fuck up poisoning the locker room. Mm-hmm. I really wonder.
Well, they took Randy Moss. They took Corey Dillon. They took AB. They took a lot of guys that other people wouldn't touch. And they played well. I mean, AB played one game, but he caught a touchdown without even practicing with them. Mm-hmm. It's been done before. LeGarrette Blount. Nobody wanted to touch LeGarrette Blount coming out of Oregon after he freaking knocked that dude out.
I don't want to touch him other than that Boise State player who tapped him on the shoulder and got knocked out.
He said he did more than tap him on the shoulder. He said a little something to him, and LeGarrette Blount didn't appreciate it. So, it's been proven that if you have a strong veteran locker room, you can absorb not all of them, but one or two maybe character issue guys, and let them know, hey, this is the way we do things here. If you act up, you're going to stick out like a sore thumb because no one else is acting up with you.
We'll see what they do, but it's all good news so far. Next week is the draft in Las Vegas. I'll be in Vegas. Might swing by, shoot some photos with you for you guys, shoot some video.
Have you seen that draft setup they have? It's like a floating stage.
It's the biggest stage they've ever made in Las Vegas.
It's amazing.
Biggest stage.
You see that shit? It's floating on the water. So the draftees have to walk down a bridge to get to the stage. That's badass.
It's going to be nuts. So we'll see if I can get some stuff for you guys. We'll obviously have a full breakdown of the draft next week. Afterwards, of course, after that. Maybe we'll do some live draft. It's weird because we don't have a first round pick. So it's not like, hey, first round, we're live. Talking about the players Raiders didn't get.
If I'm home and able to jump on like and just watch the draft with you guys, why not? You know, I'll see if I can make that happen.
Well, until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Of course, make sure you check us out on social media and on YouTube as well. It's where all the extra bonus content is, and you're not going to want to miss it. Until next time, later.